Okay, this interview for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program, dealing with the Youngstown community, the Youngstown Jewish community, and the Rabbi Sidney Berkowitz. The interviewee is Mr. Donald McKay. The interview is taking place at the Home Savings and Loan Building in downtown Youngstown on July 15, 1992, at approximately a quarter after 10. The interviewer is Matthew Butts. Start off by asking some real brief biographical questions.
Sure.
Tell me something about your childhood, where you grew up, your education.
Well, my parents lived on Alex Street on the north side of Youngstown.
Uh-huh.
That's where I was born, at our house on Alex Street. Lived there until I was about 9 years old, and then my grandmother died, and my mm-hmm. grandfather had a decided his business here. He also had a large farm out in Boardman, and so we moved to, my parents sold their home, and we moved out with my grandfather's house, and that became my family home until, of course, I went away to college and so forth.
Okay, you attended Boardman High School?
Yes.
What was your education there like?
It was great. Of course, back in those days, Boardman was a very small community. I think there were 5,000 people in the entire township, and they have more students than that in the school system alone now.
Uh-huh.
But I think our graduating class was less than 80 people in 1937. But it was a very solid mixture of suburban residents plus farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great community because everybody knew everybody else.
Uh-huh.
That could lead to some complications sometimes because not only did everybody know everybody else, but they knew everybody what kind of a car they drove and everything else, and you had to be very careful where you were seen with who so that you didn't get into trouble with somebody else's boyfriend.
Describe physically to me what Boardman looked like growing up.
Well, in essence, from Route 224 south, it was farms.
Uh-huh.
And there were a few housing developments north of 224. Of course, Forest Glen had been built largely during the 1920s, but Boardman, like every place else, the entire community, things kind of came to a standstill during the 30s, during the Depression years.
Uh-huh.
There wasn't too much construction going on. It had boomed during the 1920s, slowed down during the 1930s, and of course stopped during the war years, but then after that, why, it just exploded, and what is now well-developed and residential areas were farms back then.
Mm-hmm.
So it has completely changed in nature from a very small, suburban, sort of farm-like community to a very busy metropolitan area now.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite stories is that when I played football and basketball at Boardman, their school was just south of the 224 and Market Street intersection there, and I used to have to walk home after practice about a mile and a half because there wasn't enough traffic on 224 to hitch a ride home, and now there are 25,000 cars a day go through that intersection.
Yeah.
So it was a very different community then. But I suppose, like most other communities, people struggled with the problems that the Depression had caused, and some or other, it was a much simpler life, but it was a congenial group of people.
Uh-huh.
Everybody knew each other and were friendly with each other.
Did you have any opportunities to come downtown, to downtown Youngstown, or?
Well, yeah. I, as a as a young boy, and later I spent a lot of time down at the YMCA. And of course, my father and grandfather both worked here, and as a consequence, I was familiar with downtown Youngstown.
Uh-huh. What did it physically look like?
Well, it was a very busy downtown section. I have a someplace in the company archives, I have a picture that was taken from the area of foot of Belmont Avenue looking up Federal Street.
Uh-huh.
Sidewalks jammed with people, stores of all kinds, that, many of which have since been torn down or emptied, just busy. It was the commercial heart of the entire area.
Mm-hmm.
People came downtown to shop. There were no such things as malls and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That picture that I mentioned we have shows not only the crowds on the sidewalk, but they used to have the electrical trolleys that are trolley buses.
Mm-hmm.
They were buses, but they ran on electricity, and the streets were crowded with them. It was a busy, busy town.
Mm-hmm.
And if you back in those days, for example, McKelvey's department store, which was later became Higbee's, had a very large grocery store in, mm-hmm. In the back end of it. And people used to call in there and place grocery orders over the telephone, and then have the McKelvey delivery trucks deliver the grocery orders to their home.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of the really, in a way, was one of the first supermarkets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you lived on the north side, what was the north side like? Was it a very ethnic part of the city, or was it mixed?
Well, it was mixed. Of course, the north side probably had a, historically, in my opinion anyway, the thing that really made the north side very important was the reputation and quality of the Rand School.
Uh-huh.
The Rand School was in those days one of the finest educational institutions in the state.
Mm-hmm.
It had a very strict standards and was very highly organized. For a long time, why the top 10% of the student body at Rand School could be admitted to almost any university in the country. And that went, made it very stable. And then, of course, you had a lot of people of considerable means who lived on places like Wick Avenue and Fifth Avenue, mm-hmm. and those areas. And it was a, the North Side was a very good and very stable community. Halleck Street, for example, where we lived, I still have a number of friends who grew up there,
mm-hmm.
on the street, and of course, eventually, almost all of them moved away to someplace, Boardman, Poland, or wherever they were. But there were several dozen families on that street who still keep in touch with each other through our longtime friendships. It was a good north side of Youngstown was a great place to live.
Mm-hmm. See that you're a veteran of the United States Army. Where did you serve?
Well, I was originally inducted in the Army in April and went through basic training, and then after that, after basic training, I got a chance to try out for Officers Candidate School and was got my commission then, and as a second lieutenant, and then I was assigned to Kansas City, Kansas, for a couple of years, and then from there I had an opportunity to get into military government work and went to Yale University for 6 months to study Japanese,
mm-hmm.
and Japan, and with the thoughts in those days, of course, were that to win the war, we were going to have to invade Japan, and that the casualties in the civilian population would be so great that they would need to have a military government imposed on them just to keep the keep the society functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were being trained to help support the remnants of the Japanese population to maintain city services. Mm-hmm. Of course, it didn't work out that way, but we spent 6 months at Yale University and learned to speak Japanese, and then went out to California and were stationed there, and then eventually went over to Japan, and I was stationed in Kyoto in Japan for about 6 months, and then managed, by that time the war was over and I got sent home.
Okay. When you returned to Youngstown, what had changed from when you had left?
Well, in 1946, not a whole lot. Remember that during the Depression year, during the 30s, why, of course, the steel mills were down, the Depression was at its greatest, and economic activity in Youngstown didn't start to pick up until about 1938 or 9, when the war started in Europe, and business then began to boom. And, of course, obviously continued during the war years when the demand for steel and steel products of all kinds was enormous. And it was it had become a prosperous town by 1946. And jobs were very easy to come by. In fact, people were desperately searching for people because there was more work than there were more jobs than there were people to fill them. But nothing really had changed in the sense that people were employed and busy and so forth, but it was still the same kind of a community. The exodus out to the suburbs didn't begin to occur until a few years after that,
mm-hmm.
when some of the strip plazas and eventually the Southern Park Mall and then, Eastwood Mall and all those things changed the shopping habits of people, and they began to slowly go other places to do their shopping than downtown, and that in turn caused the downtown to begin to shrink.
Mm-hmm. So, what happened to the downtown really wasn't the closing of the steel mills really didn't have much of an impact, but downtown was already pretty much.
Well, it was changing. By the time the steel mills closed, it had changed dramatically. After all, by that time, the Southern Park Mall, for example, was the place to go, and a lot of other outlying smaller plazas and so forth had drawn business away. But really, I suppose you would say that up until a time in 78 or 9 when the steel mills closed, there were four most important people in town were the heads of the steel industries, U.S. Steel, Republic Steel, and Sheet and Tube.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth one, then, was the most important factor, was United Steelworkers, particularly Jim Griffin, who was very powerful man and whose labor policies affected almost every other organized labor group in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Steel workers were paid well with good benefits and so forth, and because they were so strong, everybody else was strong, the carpenters, the plumbers, the electricians, and all those, and those four people, the union head and the three major steel industry leaders, pretty much dictated the
mm-hmm.
labor policies and wage patterns and that sort of thing. So that after the steel mills closed, what you had was a situation, instead of having a very small number of very large employers, began to have a very large number of small employers.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, I think it made for a more diverse and probably stronger community because you didn't have power concentrated in a few hands.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it was spread among many. I think that was a good idea. or a good, not idea, but it was a good development. I think the community of Youngstown probably in, well, I shouldn't say community of Youngstown, but Mahoning County is probably in many ways stronger now than it was then. Because you have a whole wide diversity of interest instead of a concentration of power in a few hands.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving into what we're doing with Dr. Berkowitz. Do you recall when you first met him?
Well, I relationship was said, I suppose my first recollection of him was as a member of the Youngstown Rotary Club.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I saw more of him than any other place. I was involved in a lot of civic enterprises of one kind or another and frequently encountered him in those areas, but I saw more of him in Youngstown Rotary than I did any place else, and appreciated his wisdom. I remember the day that he and a group of others who had been down in that Selma, Alabama situation,
uh-huh.
and arrived back in town just in the morning of and walked of the Rotary Club meeting. And he walked into the meeting having come directly from Selma and was made quite an impression on everybody when he told what had happened down there. That Sid was a very bright man and very active in so many places, and he had a terrific reputation in Rotary for giving an invocation which consisted usually of one or two lines with a very sharp comment.
Uh-huh.
He always kind of looked forward to his invocations because he always had a point.
Uh-huh. Is there any that stick out?
No, not specifically. All I can remember is that when Sid gave the invocation, you listened.
Uh-huh.
He was a great guy.
Describe for me what he looked physically.
Well, he wasn't a big man. I don't recall exactly how tall he was, but I would say about 5'7" or 8", something like that. And I suppose weighed about 150 pounds, something.
Mm-hmm.
Not a large man, but he had a quick wit and a ready smile and a voice that was penetrating and that you paid attention to. Those are the things I remember best about him.
Well, what was his role in Rotary?
I don't know that he ever held an official position as a board member or president. He may have been, frankly. If so, I don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a member of Rotary now for 37 years, and I'm not sure that he was ever anything other than an active member.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever you, if you had lunch with him, why, it was always a very lively conversation.
Uh-huh. were there, did he have many interests, or?
Honestly, I don't know what his personal interests might have
uh-huh.
been. I wasn't that friendly with him personally to know what his hobbies were or so forth. Of course, he had a great interest in people and was obviously very concerned with the treatment of the black population, and that was why he got so involved in that Selma thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like a rabbi should. He was interested in people who needed his help.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything he had to say about the civil rights movement?
Not specific words.
Uh-huh.
All I know is that he found it very hard to believe that everybody wasn't as engrossed in it as he was.
Uh-huh.
Because he was engrossed in it and spent an awful lot of time doing what he could in those fields. But I don't remember specific words, except that I do recall him being astonished that people were not as avidly interested as he was.
Uh-huh. How about you mentioned some of the other civic things that you had occasion to run into. Do you remember what any of those were?
Oh, honestly, I think at one time I belonged to 13 or 14 in different organizations, from Red Cross through mental health and everything that you can think of, and I ran into him in those ways.
Uh-huh. Was he actually involved with Red Cross?
I don't recall specifically. I'm not sure what his outside activities were.
Would you describe him, though, as one of the leaders within the Youngstown community?
Oh, I definitely think so.
Uh-huh.
He was by far, I think, the most notable and particularly obviously in the Jewish community, the Jewish sector of the community. I think he was probably their most visible spokesman, and very, very good at it, and respected for it.
Mm-hmm. With the Youngstown Jewish community, was growing up, did you ever feel that Youngstown had any anti-Semitism or a base of it here?
I never did, personally, because I had an awful lot of friends, and still do. I have an awful lot of friends who, many of whom happen to be Jewish. As far as I'm concerned, though, they're friends, not Jewish friends.
Uh-huh.
And I never saw any visible signs of anti-Semitism at all.
Uh-huh. How about Rabbi Berkowitz being, sort of alluded to him being the spokesman for the Jewish community? Was there any other religious figures that were in the same way from their own religious background that were?
Oh, gosh, I'd have to stop to think. There were a lot of very, very prominent ministers and so forth at the time, who, again, were very active in that field, but most of whom spoke for their own congregations,
uh-huh,
and so forth, and not for... Of course, obviously, all of the Jewish community in town did not belong to Rabbi Berkowitz's, to Dr. Berkowitz's church,
uh-huh,
or temple. But he was, he came, I think, to have a position where he was kind of speaking for them, which was a little different than the pastor at one church or another in Protestant faith or Catholic faith, in that they would speak for their own congregations and not for a segment of the community.
Mm-hmm. Did Dr. Berkowitz have a lot of contact with Bishop Malone? Were they?
I wouldn't have any idea. I would not know this at all for a fact, but of course Bishop Malone is also one of the people that I've admired so heavily through all of my life, and I have nothing but admiration and respect for him, and I would assume that they probably did.
Uh-huh.
After all, it would be very natural that they did, but I don't know that, so I can't say yes they were.
Uh-huh. But interested, everybody mentions Dr. Berkowitz's ability to be a great orator. Describe for me, when he spoke, what was his magnetism, or what about his speech? So,
well, he I don't know if I can answer that. He had a way of phrasing things that caused you to pay attention to what he was saying.
Uh-huh.
He had a very good command of the English language, and he was a talented speaker and knew how to emphasize the points he made. And whenever he spoke, why, you listened. But I can't cite a thing that he said particularly. I just remember he used to enjoy the hell out of it listening to him. Because he was good.
Did you ever have the occasion to go up for any function at Rota Shalom?
No, never did.
Never had a chance? Okay. How about people, usually the individuals I've interviewed so far, have mentioned his sense of humor.
Yes.
What type of humor was it? What did he do that was so...
Oh, I don't know. He always had the ability to put into a few words comments that were very apt for the situation, and he did it in a fashion that did demonstrate his sense of humor. I don't know. It's kind of a hard thing to recite because I can't quote you anything that I specifically remember, but I would say that he was a very determined person. And, was not at all unwilling to debate if somebody who had a different point of view than he did, and with occasional use of sarcasm. But I always enjoyed, as I've said several times, I enjoyed listening to him and hearing him talk, and both as a speaker and also just as a conversationalist at noon. He was a sharp guy.
A couple more things. How about the religious? Was he able to foment a better way to rephrase this? He was able not only to help the Jewish community, but the entire civic community in Youngstown?
I think so. I think that Sid, in particular, was very sensitive to the sufferings that the Jewish race had historically, going back into dim history. He was very aware of that, and therefore he was very sympathetic to people who were in the same category, blacks, for example. He was very sympathetic to their causes, and was very outspoken about it, and as he should have been. All I can say about that, I guess. I do remember one time I was walking down the sidewalk one day after meeting with a friend of mine who and Sid, and I said something to both of them as we were walking along that there always seemed to be a certain affinity between the black community and the Jewish community when it came to political persuasion. And I said just casually, why is this so? And both of them commented were that probably it was because historically in the background they both came from situations in which they were oppressed. And maybe they had a certain similar ambition was to get away from that oppression. I can remember that conversation very clearly.
Is there anything we really haven't touched on that you think we should add? Or?
No, I'm sure that there are an awful lot of people who knew Sid personally. Far better than I did, who could more help to you than I can. As I say, my relationships never got to that of a personal thing where we ate lunch together or visited each other's home. I wasn't that kind of a friend. I was just an admirer of him for the talents that he displayed and the things that he did.
Uh-huh. Did he have any business connections with
none.
Savings?
No. No.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. I'm afraid I'm not your best candidate for...
No, this is very good.
Because I don't have the personal knowledge of him that a lot of other people would.
No, this was very good.